Good morning, church.
Good morning.
It is a wonderful morning, isn't it? And you know what? We are starting a new section in Exodus. And where we have been was a section dealing with worship, chapters 25 through 31. And in that section, God is making it possible for Him to come to His people and be among them and dwell among them in a more visible way. They can worship Him. And with that, He gave instructions from 25 through 31 on how this would be done. It would be done with a tabernacle. You remember that? We went through a lot of details. Not a narrative. It's not something that you'd pick up and just want to read. Because we see a lot of intricate details. Sacrifices and offerings and the priesthood. A place where people could come to experience His presence. And that's what God desired. And we know that people naturally have a desire to worship a God or gods or the true God. And when we looked at the tabernacle, we saw a great place of worship, and it reminded us of creation. He made a picture there where they could see what God had done. Whenever He created, He was amongst Adam and Eve. He walked with them. And He wanted to do the same thing again in this physical way, in a sense. You have the outer courtyard, and that's like the earth. And then you go further into the tabernacle, and you have the holy place, which represents the heavens, the sky with the lights in it. And then you go all the way back into the Holy of Holies, and that is the place of God where He dwells. For instance, that would be like heaven. So you have the earth, the heavens, and then the heaven where God resides in that particular place. So you have a desert, and in the middle of this desert you have this beautiful place where people can take refuge and they can rest in God. And so what God is doing from these chapters, now they haven't had the tabernacle yet and the priesthood. That's not happened, but that's what God is doing with Moses during this section of 25 through 31. And it's all about order and beauty. And it's all about rest. That's what God was making for the people. Isn't He gracious? Isn't He a good God? And He desires for us to seek Him individually and as groups of people, a church. So it really is a reminder of creation. So He created, He came with His people, and then came the fall. You remember that in creation? What He does, He sets up a way where people can come to Him. And as He's doing that with Moses, the fall of Israel is happening. Quite a crisis is happening at this time that God is giving the instructions. What follows in Exodus in these next few chapters is ugly. You see a beautiful worship that God designs, and then mankind designs their own worship. Do you see the flow that's happening in Exodus? We see creation in Genesis, and fellowship, and then the fall of man. Exodus shows the same thing. God's way of worship is perfect. Man's way of worship is detestable. And it's a tragedy. So it's Genesis all over again, where you have Adam and Eve, but then you have a promise of the Messiah. A promise that there's going to be restoration. And you get the story of redemption in the book of Genesis. And you know the whole Bible, you can sum up, is a story of redemption. You have creation, you have redemption, or you have the fall, and then you have redemption. A restoration that we even look forward to even further. But you had Adam and Eve, and we know later the people that were populating the earth, and turned against God, wanted to do their own thing, and God had to send a flood. So He had to bring on His wrath again. He brought on the curse back in Genesis 3. And now we see a continuation of how people's hearts are. And then we see later on in Genesis, as people spread out, were supposed to spread out, they got together at the Tower of Babel. And again, God had to split that up because mankind was getting so intelligent. He had to do something about that. And over and over and over and over and over again, you see the sin of mankind and then God working with His plan and still bringing forth redemption. Over and over again, you'll see. There was creation, there was the fall, there was redemption. And we thank the Lord for the story of redemption. And we witness that in this section of chapters 32 through 34. But what we're going to witness today is a terrible disaster, a tragedy that actually happens. Let's turn in our Bibles to chapter 32 of Exodus. Let's read the first 6 verses. We're doing 10 verses today, Lord willing. Now, when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. What is going on? Okay, Moses had been on the mountain for like 40 plus days. And what you have is a whole nation of people who are becoming impatient. So the key word here is impatience. See that up there? Impatience. Can you guys say impatience? Impatience. Can you guys identify with impatience? Every one of us can. We do this quite frequently in our lives. God wants to be among His people. He wants them to worship Him. But He's taking His time to show how it's going to be to do that. So now we come to this great crisis in the history of Israel. This is baffling how this could happen. What they are doing in the light of what God has done and is doing, and of course will do, it's beyond our thinking, isn't it? Why? We wouldn't have done that. Or would we? What they do is they violate the very commandments that they said that they would do way back in chapter 20. We can say a few months ago. They violate the commandments that are supposed to bring forth loyalty. And we know the first two commandments are dealing with not having any other gods, having only one God. But they're not supposed to make any image. And they said, "God, whatever you command us and tell us to do, we will do it." And they've said that. They've said that more than one time. So we see in this first verse, the Israelites are impatient. That's one of the reasons they do what they do. The idea is of faith is to wait upon the Lord. There's a famous verse Isaiah 40:31 that is used in so many pictures with the eagle. You guys have seen it. And of course, personally, I've carried that picture at the store over the course of many years because people like that. And well, they should. And I mean, it's a majestic eagle and it's a great picture. You know, and you think of the sky and you think of the deity of Christ. And it's just beautiful. It's a great thought. And we like that. But I think sometimes we forget that verse. Those that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Right? They will run and they will not be weary. We sing songs about that too, don't we? So we all know that verse. Well, the idea of faith really is to wait upon the Lord. Wait. He said, I have. I've waited. Well, do you believe God? Well, I don't know. I don't know if I believe Him or not. Well, do you believe He's really sovereign? Yeah. But I've prayed and I've prayed and I haven't gotten my answer yet. Can anybody identify with that? We've been there. You'd like to say, hopefully we won't be there again. But our flesh might lead us there again. That's one of the greatest tests we have, to wait on God to meet our needs. Because we can't meet our needs. We really can't. We have not the strength. We have not the ability to meet our own needs. And so what the Israelites do here, I think, is a good lesson that we can do. We may not go out and take an idol and worship it. God forbid that anybody do that. You know, make a bull and put it out in your backyard or whatever. Can you imagine that? Or have some kind of image and worship it every day. We're not going to do that. But here's the thing. Sometimes we take the matters in our own hands and make it happen. What they're going to do is they're going to take the matter of worship. Because everybody has this in their own hearts to worship something. Everybody does. Even the greatest of the atheists. I know that they would disagree, but they have something to worship. Whether it be themselves, the things that they own, their own philosophies, right? But they're going to take this matter in their own hands. And so what they do in the first verse, they saw that Moses delayed coming down. Well, he delayed because God has him up there for a purpose, because he's going to give them the most wonderful worship that they've ever had, and he's not going to just throw this together. He's going to make sure it is right, down to every word. Well, he delays. The people gathered together. Does your version have gathered or something along that lines? This is not one of those friendly gatherings here. I want you to take note. What happens is that the people are like a group of bullies that are surrounding Aaron. That they're coming upon him and they are putting pressure on him. Have you ever had pressure from people who don't want to do the things of God? And so they put pressure on you. Well, they're surrounding him. He's like a victim in a sense. Now, I'm in no way excusing Aaron here. But in the Hebrew sense of the word, that's what they're threatening him. So, maybe, let's give the benefit of the doubt to the Israelites. Maybe they are in panic over the fact that they've had the presence of God all this time, for months now, 3 months or so, and they've lost contact with God. And the mediator is Moses. And you remember, they didn't want to hear God's voice. They wanted Moses to speak for God. You remember that. Moses is not there. So that's why they're saying, hey, this fellow Moses. It's like they're saying to Aaron, his brother, aren't you going to do something about it? You better do something. We've been out here for over a month and nothing is happening. You know, they don't have the leadership of Moses there. I think they're anxious. Do you guys think they're anxious? Do you think it's a good thing to be anxious? What does Jesus say? Do not be anxious. What does that mean? Give me what that means in the Greek. What is the meaning of that? It means Do not be anxious. What's that?
Depression.
Yeah. Yeah, we can have that on us, right? We become really anxious. Nothing's happening here, so we got to do something. It's not ever an excuse for sin, though, is it? Matter of fact, it is a sin. Do not worry. Do we worry? Well, we can fall into that too, can't we? Well, these people are somewhat like us. So they gather around Aaron. And what do they say? Come, make us gods that shall go before us, that will lead us. We need to keep going. We're heading to the promised land, right? That's where they're headed. We need something. We need gods. We need somebody to lead us on out of here into the... We don't want to spend another month out here in the desert. Can you see what their reasoning would be here? Have you been in the desert? You know what? You are in the desert of this time that we have on the earth. Even though we have greenery all around us, and isn't it beautiful? All the flowers that have come out and everything. But we're still in the desert. And it can be uncomfortable in the desert. It can be hot and the pressure can come on you. But God is doing a work. And until it's time to go into the promised land, He's going to make you trust Him. And that means waiting, which we do not like to do. I don't know anybody that likes to wait. We are an instant kind of people today. I mean, you go to McDonald's and you want your food like that. And if there's somebody in line, you even get upset. And they get the food and it's like 5 minutes, 10 minutes late. By the way, you probably get the wrong order. I said McDonald's. We can go on and on with all the other stuff. Or, you know, it's quick. You know, I want this. I want it now. I don't want it later. Let's go. Let's move it. I mean, that's just the way it is. Everything. Snap, snap. And now you have, not only is it good enough to have internet, you've got to have it with some high speed. No more of that dial-up. I mean, I'm not telling you to go back to dial-up. But if you don't have any options, though, of course, that's another thing. And then you get that high speed, and it's pretty quick. You want another high speed, right? And then go on and on. I just brought that up to present day, right? I mean, that's just the way we are. But if you pay money for it, you expect it. You better get it, right? Yeah. I know. Come on, come on. I'm doing like this all the time. Come on. Somebody's waiting. Come make us gods. They want a visible representation of the one true God. That's what they want. Doesn't sound too bad. They really want the true God. They don't want the false gods that everybody else has out there. But they want some kind of representation. They weren't requesting a different God here. It's the true God. But they want something visible that will give them hope. It seems like they've lost their hope. So, by their very actions that they do here, they almost forfeit what they wanted the most. They want the presence of God. But by taking it into their own hands and doing something else, they really almost lost it all. The people want God's presence now. Anything wrong with that? No. But you want it in the way that God does it. The very thing they want is the irony of idolatry. Does that make sense? They have this hole in their heart. And they desire to fill that, and it is with the one true God, but they're not valuing Him. Who are they really thinking about? Isn't that a problem? Isn't that really always the problem? It's me. They don't value Him here. They are not longing for Him. They're not loyal to Him. We just can't make out God to be the way that we want Him to be and answer things the way that we want it to be. We want God and His will, right? So what they do is they make God in their own imagination. And that's what billions of people are doing today. They're putting God in their own minds the way that He ought to be. And even Christians, true Christians who have the true God, make images or imaginations of what God should be like. So they lower Him down from the heavens, bring Him down in to be a genie, to give Him, to give you what you want. Boy, that is really easy to pick on if you look at the health wealth gospel. That's shooting for everything about me rather than God. But we all are kind of that way. Sometimes we make our prayers that way rather than what God's will is. We want things the way that we want it. So they went back to what they were familiar with. They went back to the pagan ideas. They make a God they can see. It was a polytheistic world. Polytheism. Poly means many. Theistic God. Gods. Many gods. All over Egypt, all over Canaan, all over the world, there were gods everywhere. They had a god for everything. You know, a god of the weather, god of thunder, and god of lightning. They had a god being represented by animals. You look in Romans chapter 1 and you'll see the downfall of man when they lost what the true God was and started making things the way they saw Him as, and they got away from the true God. So they're living for the image rather than the reality. So if we don't focus upon what the Word of God is and His will, being led by God's Spirit, we start making images in our own minds. If their mediator, Moses, was not going to show up, and evidently it seems like he is gone. Wherever he's at, he must be done. Maybe he's dead or something. We don't know. He's not here. So they get a mediator. Their mediator is an inanimate mediator. We all need mediators, don't we? They knew that they couldn't make it out there by themselves. They knew that, didn't they? So let's get a mediator here right now. I think they have disrespect for the mediator that God gave them. Because what do they call Him here? Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, or some of your translations will say, this fellow Moses, this man Moses. They're saying it in a very derisive way. A way of contempt is what they're doing with this Moses. It's quite ironic. For the very man who is standing between the people and God is the mediator, Moses himself, and he will be mediating for them very quickly in this chapter. Standing in the gap for them, willing to even give up his life for them, and here they are, bringing on contempt. Very derisive manner. What a picture, though, of the ultimate mediator, Jesus Christ. He is our mediator. Without Him, we know we're nothing, don't we? He stands between us and God the Father. He mediates. He did that mediatorial work on the cross, and He continues to do it as He ever liveth to make intercession for us. He's the great high priest. Sometimes we are faithless, but our mediator is faithful. And that's what we're going to see in this story as it goes. Now, we're not going to get to all the story today, and it's too bad. I have to break it up because we really need to read the whole story as a whole, and we could do that. But we're going to put it on hold. We're just going to go as far as we can go. So they have disrespect. And Aaron now gives instructions. We have a very impatient group of people here. So Aaron said to them, okay, break off the golden earrings. Take them from every young child, daughters, mothers, wives, whatever. Go get all the gold. And so he comes up with the solution here. Why Aaron would do this We really don't know. Other than I'm sure there's probably a lot of pressure. But he shouldn't have given in. I'm sure God would have protected him somehow. And so, even though he knows better, he puts the request, he facilitates this whole deal, and he doesn't look good doing such a thing. He is ever etched in the Word of God for what he did here. A despicable thing, and yet he had done some amazing things and said some great things, that being the mouth of God speaking to the Egyptians. Now he pulls this thing off. Just when you think you've got it together and you're walking in the Lord, you go and do something that is despicable. Why do we do that? Why did Aaron do this? Well, the people here are commanded to give their gold. It's like taxes. The leader says, okay, and he smacks it on them. He says, give me all your gold. It's going to cost you. It did. Now, when God puts the tabernacle together, does He make the people give gold? No. Matter of fact, it's a free will offering. I mean, the instructions that they need the gold, the people are, take everything. But here, they're taxed. They're forced to do this. Now, people are commanded to give their gold. When God asked for gold, it was this great offering, voluntary giving. But they have to do this. Now, Aaron's thinking through this. He's got the gold, and he fashions it. Takes the engraving tool out. In other words, the idol tools. Engraving tools. Aaron made a bull or an ox. Now, I think in our title we have the golden calf, and that's what you've always heard of, the golden calf. But in the translations, it's probably better to use a young bull or a young ox. Not just a little baby here, but it's something of great strength. The Egyptians had a bull god. I was afraid if I put the golden bull on there, it would sound like one of those energy drinks. You know what I'm talking about? That's the reason I kept it with a golden calf. I wanted to change it, and I kept thinking, you know. And I went for, I must have gone 15, 20 minutes just thinking, how can I make it? And so I came up with something original, the golden calf. People have used it for centuries. So, okay. But this might have reflected Baal worship. Think of the Canaanites, the bull god in Egypt. Hey, they all had this bull. Because he is considered to be very powerful, very strong, and it's dominating. That's what a bull is. A young bull. You know? Are you catching the idea? So, just a few weeks ago, they committed not to have any other gods or idols. And now, before them, is this gold god. Now, Yahweh is associated with this piece of gold. Why do you say that? Well, if you look at the end of verse 4, it says this. Then they said, excuse me here, this is your God, O Israel. This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. This is Yahweh. They use the word God, little g there, but this is the one that brought you out of Egypt. This is the true God. There He is. They stick with what the pagans had done. They look at that. Yeah, okay. Well, they have theirs, and that's to their pagan deity. We have our God right there. Right there. You can see. Everybody can see it. You know what? What's ironic about this is that if you remember, you go back to Egypt where they had been. God brought on the 10 plagues, and it seems like in all those plagues that He defeated an idol out of each one of those plagues. He defeated their gods all the way through. You remember that? So He'd already beaten the pagan gods of Egypt, and how ironic this is they raise up this bull before these 2 million people. And you have manipulation going on here. A lot of manipulation. The people wanted God's presence, but they replaced the reality with an image. God is real. Now you have an image. Augustine said this, hearts are restless until they find the rest in God. I want to tell you, any person that does not know Christ is restless. And they're looking for anything and everything they can to fill the void. So they worship all sorts of different things. And in the time that we live in, people run from drugs to drinking to the sexual escapades, and everything has to keep getting more and more and higher and higher, and they're still trying to fill the void. And they can't do it. They're restless. They're really unhappy. They don't have the answer. And if they do have the answer before them, they don't want that. Well, this is what they're doing here. The image. What is our image? Whatever you live for, the image is a mirage. If you're looking for something to satisfy your heart and it's not Christ, you have an image and it's just a mirage. Because when you go out into a desert, all of a sudden you see that looks like about 500 yards away, oh, that's a pool of water up there. It looks like a lake. And you go running to it. And you go diving into the sand. And all of a sudden, as you try to lap for water, all you get is sand. The mirage. The image is a mirage. It looks like an oasis in a difficult world. As soon as you drink from its waters, you wind up with sand. Wow. That's what people are doing out there. We were made for God. We sing that song, we were made for worship. You and I are made for worship, right? We were made for Him to worship. And we will never be satisfied with anything else. They had the true God. And they're looking for something else to meet with this true God and fulfill their needs. Everything we live for other than God is an idol. That's your image. If you're living for something else, and I don't care what it is, it can be something very valuable and something very good. But if you're living for that, if that's what you're wanting to meet your life with, and that's what your desire is, you are heading for a mirage. And you'll get sand in your mouth. It's an image we have made, and that is rebellion. God takes it very seriously if you are not anchored onto Him. And even if you're one of His, He takes it very seriously. They're turning this whole Exodus experience on its head. They're using some of the same things, the same language and everything else, the same kind of system it seems, but they're turning it upside down. The very thing they wanted was the irony of idolatry. They devised a way to provide for themselves. We are not to provide for ourselves. That goes up against the grain of what grace is all about. It's a works-based system. They sought out a way to manipulate the power of the world, which this bull represents, the power, the strength, the might, the domination of this bull, and that's going to provide for their needs. How ignorant. What happens when we seek out to meet our needs for ourselves? What happens? Have you ever done it? This is the depth of the human problem. Idolatry is a terrible, wicked, evil sin. Something you see all throughout the Old Testament. The Israelites continued to go into idolatry even when they got into the Promised Land. And it exists today It involves human desire. And we want things. Yeah, you can say, yeah, I know about the material things. But we're not just talking about material things. We want pleasure. We want comfort. We want security. Anything wrong with any of those? Not necessarily. But what if they dominate your life? What if the very idea of comfort, and you may not have the comfort at the time, so you do something no matter what, and rather than trusting in the Lord, you take it into your own hands. We're willing to do almost anything to get. And that can be self-destructive. And it can be even forbidden by God. Where is your treasure? That's the question we ask. Jesus says where our treasure is, there is where our heart is. What does your life revolve around? Have you found some new toy? Some new thing to be interested in? Does it revolve around that? Has that now become your life? What do you value the most? You say, well, it's only for a short time and then I'll be done with it. Well, then you'll find something else. What's your idol? What's most important to you? What do you live for? What's really pushing you today? Where your treasure is, there also will be where your heart is. Do you live for material things? Idolatry always wants our interest. Put down the graving tools. Let's look at verse 5 and 6. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation, said, tomorrow is a feast to the, who? Yahweh. And they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Here's false worship. And you see words right there that come right out of the Old Testament. This is what God is doing. He's devising all these things. And they know about altars. They know about offerings. They know about feast. They've already had some of that. But I want you to notice the comparisons to true worship in this false worship that looks so good. You have the bull, which is really like the tabernacle. It's like the presence of God. He's there among them. There's an altar. Aaron builds an altar before it. You have offerings. Look in way back in chapter 24. This is kind of where all this started out, right at the I think it's verse 4 and 5. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and he rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And skip to verse 9. Then Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone. And it was like the very heavens in its clarity. But on the nobles of the children of Israel he did not lay his hand. So they saw God, and they ate and drank. They feasted there with the Lord. They had offerings, burnt offerings and peace offerings. They have this altar. And some of these things they're going to have again. So, they take what they know to be true as far as these things are concerned, and they reverse it. Reverse the meaning here, as you see in chapter 32, verse 6. They're undoing what God is really going to do. And they even have a feast. Aaron is saying he's assigning a feast. Tomorrow is a feast. It's a feast to the Lord. Capital letters, Yahweh. The feast day comes. and they worship their own God in their own way. And what happens when God is worshipped in the wrong way? This leads to the most despicable thing that you can imagine. They ate and they drank, did their offerings, and they rose up to play. In other words, immorality. This is an orgy that resembled the worship of all the fertility gods of the ancient Near East. And they're carrying on under the name of Yahweh. And this all started with what? Impatience. See how far it went? I said, well, I'd never go that far. Well, I would hope not. By the mercy of God, the grace of God, you know, that we'd never do something like that. But it can definitely lead into wrong thinking, wrong doing, and you never know what you might do. See how easy it is to worship other gods and not even meaning to? Impatience. If we don't wait on the Lord, we take matters into our own hands, and it can lead into something very sinful. Leads to a wrong style of living and in idolatry and in all those other religions. That's what it usually leads up to, the immorality. And it what was illegal actually became something that was encouraged to do, because you give your offerings to the ladies there, and then you get something for that, and then you've got harlotry and everything else involved in this immorality. That's what happened here when they rose up to play. So that was in a matter of quick time. Let's look at the contrast to God's way. What they do is they provide what God had already provided. We are not to provide. He does. They are the ones who take the initiative. When you see the instructions of the tabernacle, who took the initiative? Who started what? God always starts things, doesn't He? It always starts with Him, not us. They forced the offering. God didn't do that. Worship is just thrown together overnight. They got their worship together. God is up there with Moses for over the 40 days. 40 nights. Overnight, they have a building of the bull. Gold bull. The invisible God becomes a what? A visible God. God is invisible. But they want to see Him. Why do people have to have the cross and a Christ on there and then they worship that? Why do they have to have other things that will remind them to worship? Why is that? Because it comes visible. A personal God becomes impersonal, inanimate, right? He's a personal God. Now they have an impersonal God. The commandments are violated. When we worship God in spirit and truth, we are loving Him. We're loving others. Okay, now that's the first part. What about the response of the Father? Oh, I know I'm taking a long time. Moses, go down there and take care of it. They're okay. They're just impatient. He looks over it, right? Verse 7. And the Lord said to Moses, go get down, for your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I'll make you a great nation. Do you get the message? I think God is angry. Yeah, but that's the God of the Old Testament. He's not like that now. Have you ever had that? I don't want the God of the Old Testament. I want the new one. What, there are two gods? This is a God of wrath. A God of anger. He takes things very seriously. He sees sin and the consequences long before we know we even need a mediator. He knew we needed a mediator. What God does here is He distances Himself from the people. They sin. God tells Moses, hey, go look for yourself. Go down there. Look and see what the people are doing. And they're no longer God's people. You'll notice all throughout Moses tell them that this one God is saying, let my people go. How often has he said my people? He's made a covenant. He made a covenant with my people. God has. God has done that. And all of a sudden it's like, they're not mine. They're yours. And you brought them out of the land of Egypt. How often have you seen a mom and a dad who has a kid and the kid is just perfect and so nice and so good, just amazing. People see that and say, my, what a great child you have there. And, of course, everybody wants to say, well, yeah, that's my kid. But all of a sudden, the kid is doing something really bad and they get in trouble and all of a sudden, that's your kid over there. You better take care of your kid. Well, in a sense, I don't know how you can really compare that, but he's had enough. And he calls them Moses' people. And this is a language of disowning them. This is incredible. So this is it, isn't it? Well, unfortunately, we're not going to get to the end of the story today. So I say, we really need this all in one lump sum. But I want you to realize that there has been sin and God has anger against sin. What did they do? Well, they turn away from God's way. Verse 8, they have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They not only turn away from God, but they're turning away from His way. The commands are His way. It's a good thing. They've heard about those Ten Commandments, haven't they? Here, God nails them with their sin. Brings it right to them, right in their face. They turned away from God's way. And you'll notice how they did it. What's the... I think it's an adverb here, right? Quickly out of the way. Are adverbs the one with the L-Y's?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Quickly. I mean, they did this thing overnight. He told them what to do. Love God here, you know. They broke the commands. They broke the relationship with God. They worship an idol. This was the particular problem. Idol worship, God hates. This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. He tells Moses, they've made themselves. They did it. They provided it. A molded calf. This is their works. And they're saying, this is the true God. They worship, sacrifice to it. He tells them exactly what they have done. Because He knows the true nature of man. Does God know about depravity of man? Ooh. He knew what was in their hearts. What does He say here in 9? Yahweh says to Moses, I have seen this people. It's a stiff-necked people. I've seen him. What, did he go down there and see him? Well, you know, he can see from anywhere he wants. You know, he's not bound by anything. What he means, he knew what was in their hearts. What's about him? In John 2, verse 24 and 25, God is doing great miracles. People are following Jesus because of those great miracles that He's doing. They're in Jerusalem. Man, they're all excited. And they want to, you know, these are the people who really look like believers. They're following Him. This isn't 24, but Jesus, looking for 23. Now, when He was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed in His name. I mean, they believed in, hey, this is really a king. There's somebody special here. His authority. But when they saw the signs which He did, that rings awfully hard. Because they're seeking the signs. They want to see more signs. They have to have signs. Sign, sign, sign here, sign there, sign everywhere. Everywhere a sign. That's a song. That's back in the 60s. 70s somewhere. Signs. But it's not the sign we worship. The sign just points us to where we're going. If you saw a sign on the highway, you said, oh, that's it. That's where I'm going. Indianapolis, Final Four. Boom, I'm stopping right here. This is it, baby. No, the sign is saying, it's on further. It's 20 more miles. You don't go and get out and start hugging that sign. You go to where it's pointing to. That's what signs were about. But Jesus did not commit Himself to them because He knew all men. And He had no need that anyone should testify of man, for He knew what was in man. These people were believing Him. They're believing Him for the signs, not for who He was and what He was about. So He didn't commit Himself to them. God knows their nature. He doesn't commit Himself to them. I know what's in them. And we see the wrath of God. As a matter of fact, He calls them a stiff-necked people. If you remember, there's a great sermon by Stephen in the book of Acts, where in Acts 7, I believe it is, he mentions some of these sections in the Old Testament, and he called them a stiff-necked people. A stubborn bunch of people. Terribly, sinfully stubborn. So, God puts forth a threat here. He said, what are we going to do with this? Now, therefore, when you see therefore, pay attention because of what something else has happened. Here's what's going to happen. Let me alone. Says Moses, don't even come to me trying to intercede. But you say, hey, I know the story. I know what Moses is going to do here. Yeah, I know. God is threatening the Israelites. He's threatening them to wipe them out. What? This is God saying this. It's not just my commentary. Now, therefore, let me alone that my wrath may burn hot against them and I may consume them. Do you think God is serious? He's not just kidding. He's serious. Well, why didn't He do it? Stay tuned for next week. God says, leave me alone. Don't come interceding to me. But that is exactly what Moses will do. And God knows that Moses is going to do that. God has been crafting Moses' heart all this time. Have you seen Moses grow? All the way through this, right? Remember the burning bush? You know, he resisted God. I don't know, how many times do we count? 4 or 5 times or so? And God is continuing to build Moses up. That's what He's doing to all of us. He said, God, I just want to be like your man. I just want to be like Paul right now. didn't even happen to Paul that way, because Paul was not, he knew he wasn't finished yet. You know, I press on toward the mark. That is what's so frustrating. We're pressing on. We're running the race. We're getting tired. Things are really being dumped on us. How am I going to make this? God, just take me. I want to go. But Moses is being built up. God is crafting that heart. He knew Moses all along would come to him and intercede. But it's a big test, isn't it? Moses probably wouldn't have been ready before this. But God has brought it up to this point now for this to happen. Israel's action deserved severe punishment. And that's exactly what God does. They deserve the very anger from God. Because God is a just God. And that's His character. God is just. And He tells Moses that His promise will stand. But that He's going to work through Moses to start up a new nation. I'll work through you. How does Moses respond to this? He hasn't even gone down there yet. He's heard what God said. God's plan is not going to be messed up. He already made a promise. Of course, you can think of the Abraham covenant, Isaac and Jacob, and all the way through the history of Israel. God is sovereign, and He will do what He says He's going to do. We have promises in here, and what He tells us, He's going to do. In the meantime, sometimes we get impatient with those promises. And He says, do you believe me? Do you have faith? Israel could miss out on the blessing, but God will do what He promises for His name's sake. God is going to get you to where He wants to get you. He's going to bring you to the very final point. He's going to bring you all the way into that presence of God. And He's going to make sure that you are a bride that is clean. No matter what. You might miss out on the blessings as you disobey that you get there, but if He's already foreordained that you are His, He's going to make sure you're going to get there all the way through. Because that's what kind of God He is. But we can miss out on blessings for our disobedience. Now let's get to the good part. I don't want to leave us hanging. We're right at the end here. There's one passage that we have to go to. And actually, it is not on here. Because as I looked at it and thought about it yesterday, I could say, okay, stay tuned to next week. Or read it for yourself. You already know it. You've read it. You've read it many times. But we have to be reminded of this. We know that God is a God of wrath. We know about His mercy. We know about His grace and love. Don't we have to be reminded of that every day? We know. Folks, I'm going to tell you something that's going to shock you now. We have to have an image. We need an image. Biblically, we need an image. Are you catching where I'm going? Has anybody caught it yet? After me talking about these images, and we have to have an image, there's an image of God that is right. But it's not made by man. Matter of fact, the image is not even made. This image is eternal. Without this image, you cannot live for what really matters. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. God, who at various times and in various ways spoke in times past to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by His Son, whom He has appointed heir of all things, through whom also He made the worlds, who being the brightness of His glory and the express image of His person and upholding all things by the word of His power, when He by Himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. Do you catch this? In verse 3, He's the brightness of God's glory. He's the express, exact, to the T, image of God's person. Jesus Christ is the exact stamp, the exact image, the image that you can see of the invisible God. God is invisible. He's Spirit. We cannot see Him. But in John 1, we see that they saw Christ. 1 John 1, it says that they saw Him, they heard Him, they touched Him with their hands. The image was living. He was in a body. The image still lives. An exact representation. Remember their representation that they supplied? Which do you want? A golden bull made by your own hands? Or do you want the invisible God who has shown Himself in the person of Christ? You don't need anything else. You trying to supply other things for your life? We need this image, Christ. We need that. He satisfies the longings of our very hearts. Seek out Christ. We need the image desperately, don't we? This exact image. Look to Christ for rest and abandon all your images and flee to our Savior Jesus Christ. Hey, there is a Facebook that Bob has set up called Exposing Our Idols. Did I get that right? Check that out sometime if you get an opportunity, if you want to get on there. It's called Exposing Our Idols. It's on Facebook, isn't it? Okay. But get on there and name some idols that you have or what Christians can have. Think about some of those things. Put them on there. Because we are always fighting this idolatry. But flee to this. Listen, this is about the redemption story. We didn't get into that yet. It comes to play later in another section. We're going to have to wait till next week. We know what Moses does. Does God change His mind? Well, no. But what do we do with the next section where we see that God changes His mind? What are we going to do with that? How do we as Christians deal with that? We know His attribute is that He is unchanging and He does not relent in changing His mind. But yet, He's going to change His mind. And God cannot lie. We need to hear the redemption story. We need to hear it over and over again. Have you heard it today? Abandon your images. Run to Christ. We rebel, but we are restored. How often He delivers us from our rebellion. I've got a little thing at the end here. What we need to see, what needs to be seen, is the violation of the covenant that brings consequences. Mankind deserves to be disowned by God and cut off by Him. That's what we deserve. That is what is fair. Coming from God's angle. That is fairness. You say, that's not fair. Coming from man's view, that's what He'll always say. That's not fair that He would have some that He'd bring in and not everybody. When we understand this passage, we realize how great grace is. If you know Jesus Christ, you have been graced every day. Until we see how our own hearts resemble this sin that we saw in Exodus 32, when we see that, we can't help but to see the great mercy of God. Because we were all idolaters. We had our own idols. God's still taking those away from us. But when you get to a point of saying, Lord, all I want is Christ. I don't want any stuff. I don't need any other stuff. Or whatever that is. Thank You for the mercy, God, in Christ Jesus.